Welcome to 50 Tie with Sheena and John on 90.7 The Capstone, and we want to thank you for joining us this Sunday afternoon for our show. And basically what we, if it's your first time joining us, basically what we talk about is just wellness for students. And we look at the entire wellness spectrum. We don't just look at the physical part of what people do. We try to look at, you know, even though that includes nutrition and things like that, me being in exercise science and Sheena being nutrition, we try to look at, we try to bring in guests who can help us look at the well-being of students. And we have a great guest that we'll get to in just a little bit who, if you have well-being in your title, I don't think it gets any more, I don't think it gets any better than that. Would you say, Sheena?
I don't think so. I mean, which I would say, I would have to assume that this person is has a very good well-being about themselves and is probably a picture of fitness too. So who knows, we might ask him about that in a little bit. But kind of talking about encompassing well-being and all active factors of wellness, John, how are you feeling? I sent some well wishes on our radio show last week. I did let our listeners know that you were under the weather so they could keep you in their thoughts. So
well, thank you for doing that. And I wish I could have listened to it, but I was actually still feeling so bad that I didn't get up to listen to anything much of Sunday. I was a slug all weekend, and I'm paying for it this week because I'm extremely lazy all week. I wish I was a slug all week.
Hey, but it's good to take some, you know, a little TLC. Your body needed that rest. So I'm trying to be optimistic. I'm trying to throw you a bone right
now. Yeah, I know. I appreciate that. You're the best at that. But I tell you what, you know, this time of year, I pulled up my phone. I was looking out at, and I know this is off the subject a little bit, but I pulled out the weather app, and I looked at a 15-day forecast. And I know that can only be so accurate, right? So I'm looking at a 15-day forecast, and we go from warm for about two or three days to very cold for about two or three days to very warm for about two or three days for 15 days straight. And to me, I mean, this is the worst time of the year, and that's probably something, you know, we need to address at some point.
I think so. Yes, I think these weather fluctuations probably aren't too good in terms of health and wellness, sickness wise. I always joke with the students that come into my office when it gets really cold that my people hail from the equator. I'm Filipino, for our listeners that don't know, and so I sometimes don't think my blood was made for this really cold weather, despite being born and raised in Alabama. So I don't know.
I love it when you break out the Filipino jokes.
I gotta represent however I can, even if you can't see me. So
do y'all have, real quick question before we go to break, do y'all have a lot, I mean, obviously this time of year you're gonna have a lot of students, but do you think a lot of it is due to these fluctuations in weather because of where we live and that sort of thing?
I think so. You know, I think it's interesting, especially with the amount of out-of-state students that we have. A lot of them are not accustomed to how changing the weather is in Alabama. And so I'll have students that come into our office and they're just not appropriately clothed for the weather. So I would like to point a finger at them not being properly attired as to why they're getting sick. But no, we have been seeing, right, you know, we've been seeing some flu. Sadly, the stomach bug's been going around.
Yes.
All that kind of fun stuff. But I would definitely say the weather has been taking a toll on our students coming to the Student Health Center.
Right. And if you're not cold enough, you should come into this room where we are right now, and it will definitely make it feel warm outside.
Hey, you know, we're kind of trying to keep germs away by keeping it nice and cold so no bacteria can thrive. We've got on our parkas in here, so we're working pretty good. But it looks like it is about time for a break. You are listening to Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and John, and we'll catch you in just a bit.
Welcome back to Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and John on 90.7 The Capstone, and we have been talking about a little bit of everything the last 5 minutes. We have been, I feel like we've covered everything that we could possibly cover in 5 minutes.
I think so. I'm pretty impressed with us.
Yeah. We've gone from the weather to our current environment to wellness to everything that we could possibly talk about. But speaking of wellness, and I think it's important every time that we define what wellness is, because people are so, people associate wellness so much with the physical part of wellness. And, you know, it's a huge part, and that's what people see, you know.
Right.
But, you know, the emotional part of wellness, the social part of wellness, the environmental, the intellectual, the environmental, so many of those things play a role in wellness and overall wellness. And it kind of, you know, I guess accumulates into your physical health.
I agree. You know, I think when we start to talk to people about, oh, would you consider yourself to be healthy or in good well-being? A lot of times we just assume that that means absence of some type of chronic disease or sickness overall. But you're right, John. There's so many different components, whether it's our mental wellness, you know, maybe even sexual wellness, you know, of course, fitness and nutrition with our areas. I know in the past we have had a guest talking about financial wellness too. And,
right.
You know, and if the finances aren't in order, that can definitely take a toll on our well-being as well.
Right. Well, we have a great person to talk about this today because, I mean, if you're the director of student care and well-being, what more could you know about that?
Exactly.
Would you say? So we're fortunate today to have an employee from here at the university, Jeremy Henderson, Jeremy, how long have you been working here at the university?
Right at 15 years.
So we've been here the same amount of time.
Yeah.
See, I've always thought about you as being like, no offense, don't take offense to this, but until you walked in here today with this little beard, I've always thought of you as being like the little kid that just started here at the university. So every time we go into our meetings, you know, that we have together, it's like, that kid's still working here, you know.
I'm okay with that. Yeah,
it's okay. Right. Yeah, it's all right for me to feel like the old man.
Yeah, I'm right. Just sitting back. I'm like, I'll let these oldies, you know, talk all they want. But, you know, Jeremy, you just said that you've been here for 15 years. Tell us a little bit about all the different department areas you've dabbled in at UA in your professional career.
Yeah, okay. Well, I was a student here. I started 20 years ago. So that sounds like a long time to say out loud, 20 years. But my first job was in community service.
Okay.
And so I did that for a couple of years. And then the majority of the time that I've been here, I worked in housing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was where I moved next. And then just this past September, I started working as director of student care and well-being.
Okay, awesome. Awesome.
You know, when you look at that, a resume like that, it speaks to wellness. I mean, everything that you've worked in has had something to do, it seems like, with improving the lives of students. I mean, what more could – I mean, we don't mention this. I don't know that we've even mentioned this one time. But housing and living in a comfortable, we always say environment being that's just around you.
Right.
But, you know, living in housing in a comfortable place that you feel safe and secure and well taken care of, that's huge. And y'all, that's where I remember you as a kid.
Yeah, but you're right. You know, if you think about, what is it, Maslow and the hierarchy, you know, to have shelter and to have your physical
right.
And to feel safe. I mean, that's really important. And then obviously we did a lot with, you know, relationships and working out conflict and wellness relationally was really important as well. So
right. Yeah. That's so many people don't know. And I know this and Sheena knows this from working in our, you know, in our the same department. All the different things that you guys do, the different programs that you offer, all of the different things that that you did offer when you were working in that department. It's just amazing, you know, the level of care that you provide these students.
And I would even say, just, you know, thinking about with that many students living on campus, how you can be able to create such great pockets of community with students, because I think sometimes a student can feel like they're just a lost number on campus. But really, I think our housing department has just done a fantastic job of, you know, creating those communities, those support systems that are in there. And of course, that's how I remember you as well, having dabbled in housing myself as an RA and then also as an assistant hall director. So it's cool to see you transition to another side of wellness and just well-being overall and using those transferable skills that you had from housing and the other departments that you've been with.
Right. So could you tell us a little bit now, you know, about exactly what you do, you know, exactly what your job entails and, you know, along with that, you know, the department that you're in, what do y'all seek to accomplish?
Yeah, sure. So student care and well-being, and, you know, again, about me, my background is in counseling. So I've done some part-time, you know, counseling stuff through the years. And so when I landed in student care and well-being, you know, it made a lot of sense because we are a office that basically we try to help any student that is going through a crisis. Now, and a crisis can be defined as a very, very small one or a great big one, you know, so crisis can be broadly defined. So that could be anything from, you know, a student that's going through an illness and they're missing class and they need some help advocating, you know, with instructors as far as being able to work with them, students that are experiencing a death in the family and trying to go through that, students that are facing mental health challenges, trying to connect with those students and help them get in touch with the right resources. So we really serve as a catch-all for, again, crisis, very broadly defined, big or little, you know, a student that's going through some sort of difficulty, financial difficulties, you know, whatever it may be that's getting in the way of that student being successful while they're here on campus, you know, we try to step in and provide a case management approach to get them connected with resources that can help them.
Jeremy, you know, thinking about all that you offer, has this department existed in the way that it does now? What's kind of the history of that? Do you know how long the Office of Student Care and Wellbeing has been around, or did it transition from another component of Dean of Students over the years?
Yeah, there's been a few iterations. I know for several years there's, you know, because as you said, it is housed in the Office of the Dean of Students. And so in the Dean of Students office, you know, these types of functions have been going on for some time. So as far as student care and well-being, you know, it's relatively young as far as within the last several years, you know, existing as it is now. But yeah, so in the Dean of Students office, there's always been, you know, sort of that person that's been able to help with students, you know, talk with students who are experiencing, who've had deaths in their families, that sort of thing. But we are definitely a very young department, and even just looking nationwide, you know, so many of us remember Virginia Tech, which is about 10 years ago now.
Right.
And so, you know, another aspect of what we do is, you know, we serve as the point on campus where students, faculty, staff, anyone in the campus community, you know, if they are witnessing someone that, a student that is exhibiting alarming behavior, you know, statements about self-harm, anything like that that's concerning, you know, we are a place that members of the campus community can contact us to let us know about that student, hopefully provide some early intervention for them. Particularly with that component of what we do in the office, you know, that's something that I think Virginia Tech really woke up the entire nation,
right,
you know, where at that time, I think there were only two colleges in the country that had a, you know, a full-time case manager on campus to work with students that were struggling. And now, you know, it's just about everybody is trying to get something like this on board to have, you know, groups that can receive that information and try to do that early intervention with students.
Random question, and I don't want to put you on the spot here, but is there a model that's out there that you use to determine if, or is there one in the process of determining if a student, how do you determine if a student is potentially a risk to other students? And if that's putting you on the spot too much, feel free to say so. But, you know, it makes sense to me that, you know, there would be a set of characteristics that we would have that we would look for in some students. I know we have to take a quick break here, and we can discuss this a little bit more on the other side of the break. But, you know, be thinking about that, or be thinking, no, John, I don't want to answer that. That's fine. Perfectly. It's no problem at all. My other question before we go to break, too, real quickly, have you seen Sheena's name on any lists at all for at risk? Because she scares me sometimes.
Well, John, I can't share that with you. That's a need-to-know
information.
It's confidential.
So,
I understand.
I think with that, it is time for our break. You are listening to Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and John, and we will catch you after the break, and we will continue our conversation with Jeremy Henderson.
Welcome back to Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and John on 90.7 The Capstone, and we're back talking with Jeremy Henderson, who's the director of Student Care and Wellbeing here at the University of Alabama, and we've been talking about, you know, some of the different job responsibilities that Jeremy has, you know, here on campus, and we have a lot to get into, you know, before the day's over with, and I can't tell you how important I think this is, what you do. It's a beautiful thing. It encompasses pretty much everything. If you want to take over our show, you're welcome to, because this encompasses everything that we try to talk about. If you'll just have us on as an occasional guest.
But I can think about that. Yeah.
Going back to what we were talking about before the break, does there exist any kind of model out there to identify students who may pose a risk to other students on campus?
Well, yes, you know, and a lot of it is, you know, it's more or less common sense, you know, and right. I think one thing when you're talking about, you know, harm, you know, harming self or harming others, mm-hmm. you know, I think, you know, part of the difficulty is just letting the community know, hey, these are things that are okay to talk about. You know, if you see something, you need to say something. That's a common phrase that's out there. See something, say something, mm-hmm. you know, so, but so much of it really is, you know, certainly just starting with just direct threats, you know, direct statements, you know, so you'll hear,
right.
you know, someone is posting something on social media, you know, saying, you know, you won't have to worry about me much longer, or wow, I want to hurt myself. You know, I think so many times, you know, people will see that and either assume that there's a joke or there's a diffusion of responsibility, you know, where no one really does anything, or at least it kind of right. lasts for a little bit. So, you know, that's the easy one. There are so many just direct statements. You know, there's some other things, not to go into it in a lot of detail, but, you know, if you see an individual that is preoccupied with, you know, with guns, you know, and there's always, you know, kind of,
right.
you know, those mm-hmm. sorts of things, and particularly with self-harm, you know, some of the signs to look for, you know, if you've got someone that is just sad all the time, you know, particularly different types of loss, you know, significant loss that are really game changers for sure. a person's life. So if that's being kicked out of school, loss of a loved one, breakup of a significant relationship, loss of a job, you know, so, and none of these things are taken in isolation, but you start collecting these little bits of information, you can get a fuller picture of what's going on with a student. And again, right. that's the idea of early intervention. You know, you can, you get one place that's collecting all of this data, all this information about a student. You know, the residence hall director sees something, mm-hmm. a faculty member sees something. So when all these just different facts that are just a little bit out of the norm, and especially if it's something that is out of the norm for an individual student. So that's why, you know, for faculty members, folks in the residence halls that have a relationship, you know, when you can see someone progress through and then you see something that is different for them in terms of their dress or their demeanor or their mood, you know, you can say, hey, something might be wrong. And we always encourage, you know, just talk to that person, especially if you know them, you know, ask them, how are you doing? You know, what's right. going on? But if there's something that's just alarming or odd, we always encourage folks to over-report, and we can collect that information and kind of, you know, determine if there's something that we need to check out.
And one thing I was going to say, and John, I'm sorry for interrupting. No, I was like, oh no, I'm that rude person that's interrupting. But, you know, just listening to you talk, Jeremy, when you think about students of concern that are shared with your office, are there reports typically from other students, or is it more faculty staff members that take the lead in sharing those students of concern with you guys?
I think there's a good dose of both. And again, I think that just culturally as a nation, I think on campus, I think we're all getting a little bit better knowing this is something that we should do. You know, again, it's sort of, I think, a relatively recent phenomenon as far as identifying these things and having someone to report them. You know, we're trying to do a better job of just letting folks know who we are and that we are the ones, right. you know, that can take that information. But yeah, there's a good dose of faculty, staff, and students that that's are right. starting to report a little bit more. So that's encouraging.
Right. And Sheena, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I was actually going to mention it to you, because this is something that we do on a regular basis when we have so many students with potential eating disorders.
Right.
And you're very well aware of that, you know, they come into our facility and they're constantly doing cardio. And who are the people, you know, as professional staff, we're in and out,
right.
you know, of the weight room and in the cardio area, and we're not in there all the time. But it's just like Jeremy said, it's building that relationship with someone so that you know if something's out of the norm. And that's kind of what we have to do, and that's the first step. You know, we've worked with you guys on, you know, what's the best way to handle this. And the best way to handle it is for our students who work in those areas to become friends with not only everyone up there that's doing cardio, but, you know, try to focus in on those people that they think might potentially have an eating disorder.
Right. I think, yeah, like you said, just building that rapport, it ends up working out so well just as far as starting that conversation with a student, because I think they're more receptive when it's someone that they've seen on a regular basis versus just a cold approach of, hey, so I see you come in here 8 times a day. What's going on? You know, and I think,
right.
like you said, it's different if the student staff, whether they are at the rec center, in housing, or anywhere else, has that established relationship. And I think, you know, our university continues to do an even better and better job of training those student workers, since they are, quote unquote, in the trenches of every
right.
day interacting with all the other students.
Yeah. And that's something that we've intentionally put into our staff training. Mm-hmm. So it's so similar, you know, in a way to what you guys do. I mean, you have those people that know them better than anybody else and notice those minute differences that a professional staff might not notice.
Right.
You know, or a faculty staff that sees them once or twice a week might not notice. So, anyway.
I know we got a few other things to get to, but I do think this is really important mm-hmm. for this, because just for anyone that's listening, you know, I think sometimes it can cause a lot of anxiety because, you know, the words are, well, I don't know what to say. I don't know how to help if I see something. And again, I think the way I try to explain it is just what would I do to be a caring friend? You know, what does a caring friend do? If you see someone that's struggling, you know, and what do you say? You can just go up to that person and tell them what you observe. You know, hey, I see you come in every day. I'm glad you're here, but I have noticed that you're a lot more sad than you usually are. I've noticed that you're talking a lot about not being around. Just let them know, hey, this is what I've observed. It's caused me concern. I care about you. Can I help you in some way? Right. You know, and then make sure that you report that to someone that can help. You know, if it's UAPD for an immediate emergency or some of our different offices, you know, depending on what the concern is that person talks about. But I think the key is just for folks to be a caring friend and talk to that person and get them connected with the help that they need.
Right. That's such a huge deal.
And, you know, just thinking about that, I think I can't remember how many years ago the university had this, but they actually had a campaign and it was called Be the Friend You'd Want to Have. And even though that's not necessarily something we actively use as a university anymore, it's certainly something that I try to share with the students that I interact with, because truly, you know, be the friend you'd want to have. And, you know, and what would you want someone to say if you were in that other person's shoes? So thank you for sharing that, Jeremy, because I agree. I think sometimes people get a little bit worried or hesitant thinking that they are going to say the wrong thing, but I think just showing that you care and that you are concerned is a number one priority.
And you know, it's also easy to, once you become friends with somebody like that, whether it's, you know, you've been taught to watch out for those types of things, once you become friends like that, you almost feel like you're betraying their trust by going to somebody and saying, hey, I think this person may have a problem. Even though they're your friend and you have, you know, their best interest at heart, they're still in the back of your mind. When y'all were talking about that just then, my first thought was, if this is somebody that I've gotten really close enough to notice differences in, you know, I feel like I, in a way that I'm betraying their trust. But it's just like you said, it's such a big deal that it has to be done, and you're not betraying their trust. You're actually helping them in the long run, whether you feel like that or not.
Absolutely. And I know I've had occasions where it ended up not being a betrayal of trust, and every situation is contextual, but a lot of times, you know, I'll just tell that person, hey, it's because I care about you. You know, if you're having thoughts of hurting yourself, if you're having thoughts of suicide, you know, and again, most of the time people are encouraged that you want to help or they want to connect you with help, you know, but I will let them know, hey, I'm going to get you some help. You know, I'd like for you to do it along with me, but we need to do this.
Right. So.
No, I think that is huge. And, you know, I've really appreciated the conversation that we've had so far this afternoon. I think it's just something so helpful for all of our listeners. But I know we have got to take another break, and we want to ask Jeremy even more about the services that his department offers. But you are listening to Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and John, and we will catch you in just a second.
Welcome back to Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and John on 90.7 The Capstone. And we want to thank you once again for spending your Sunday afternoon with us, talking with Jeremy Henderson, who has given us so much good information already. It's just been a great show. And we got you for another segment here, and we're happy to have you sharing this information with us. And your department offers so many different things. And we've just hit on one or two of these.
Right.
and these one or two are so important to the students at the University of Alabama. It's amazing to me. I didn't realize how important all of these things were. I knew that what you guys did was important. But it's really some of these things, and you get to looking at these things, and we might have to run through some of these things real quick because of time. But tell us a little bit about the different levels of assistance for the Got Meals program.
Yeah, Got Meals is a program where a student students on campus can donate a meal from their meal plan will go into a bank so that then when we have, you know, students that we learn about that come into our office that just don't have enough food to eat, you know, and they are out there. I think a lot of times we don't realize that they're sort of an invisible population to a lot of us. But then we can, and Bama Dining is so great to work with on this, you know, we'll have, you know, several meals that we can transfer to that student's action card, you know, so that they can get them some food to eat, get some meals as they're trying to, you know, carry on as a student here. We also keep a small food pantry at our office as well. So just, you know, right on the spot, you know, if we have someone that's struggling with just not having enough to eat, basic toiletries, that sort of thing,
right,
you know, we try to keep that stocked so that we can immediately, you know, provide some assistance where it's needed.
Right. Sheena, that's not if you miss breakfast on your way to work.
I know. I was thinking, I was like, you know. But, you know, in all seriousness with that, you know, qualifying for those programs, is it a tedious process for the student, or do you guys try to make it as easy as possible just so that they can receive the benefits of the program?
Yeah, I mean, as far as qualifications, you know, I mean, basically, you know, we talk with the student and just try to get a sense of their situation. And, you know, if a student is struggling and hungry, you know, then we are able to, you know, provide that assistance to them. So there's really, it's a very easy process. They just need to meet with us and have a conversation with us so we can kind of look into what their situation is a little bit. And that's all there is to it, to be able to get help by that. Again, just a plug for anybody listening, any students out there that have a meal plan, you know, this program is sustained by student donations. And so you can go to our website. It's bamacares.ua.edu. And there's a link on the website where a student can donate a meal. And so that definitely helps us out if anybody wants to do that.
No, thank you for shooting that plug. And, you know, thinking about those next levels of offerings, you know, there's the Got Meals program. And then John and I, we were looking at your website, and we noticed the Acts of Kindness with the Student Emergency Fund, as well as the Emergency Loan Program. Can you share a little bit with us about those?
Yeah, definitely. You know, so obviously another difficulty facing a lot of students is, you know, financial stress. So the Acts of Kindness program, it is a program that students can apply for financial assistance. A student would need to have some sort of qualifying event. And what that means, you know, if you know, a parent loses a job, there's a death in the family, you know, something happens. It's just to be able to sustain the fund, you know, it can't just be, well, hey, I'm just struggling, I don't have enough right now. There needs to be some sort of qualifying event that has resulted in financial hardship for that student. We have a committee that reviews all of the applications and then makes determinations as far as who gets funds and how much those funds amount to. You know, one caveat on that, just a condition, you know, these funds cannot be used for a student account. So if a student is short on tuition, you know, that sort of thing, that the Acts of Kindness Fund cannot be used for that. But, you know, paying utilities, paying the rent, you know, other difficulties like that as a result of an event that has caused financial stress is something that comes through our office.
Is this different from, and I know you mentioned this relates with the SGA, but does the emergency loan program have much to do with this, or is this totally different?
Yeah, so that is a separate thing. SGA has an emergency loan as well, and we often will refer, you know, the students that we're talking with in financial difficulty, you know, the SGA office is right across the hallway in the Ferguson Center from us, so we'll also refer students there as well. We're actually in some conversations right now, it's kind of hot off the press, about just trying to find some ways to streamline this for students, because you've got the same student that's facing that financial difficulty, so just a way to have access to any resource that is available as easily as possible for the student, rather than going to one or two or three different stops. So we're in some conversations to try to streamline that process to help students that are in need.
Right.
But yeah, the emergency loan is something that the SGA does, and definitely appreciate what they do with that.
While you did mention it, and I was, it was a question that I was going to get to in a minute, but now's a perfect time. A lot of people know where the SGA office is in the FARC. And you say you're right across the hall from that. If somebody needs to come into your office and talk to you guys, they don't want to go to the website, they want to see you directly and speak to, not you directly, but see your staff directly and speak to someone, how do they go about doing that? Where do they find that office?
Yeah, we are on the main floor of the Ferguson Center. You know, so we are in the same physical location as the Office of the Dean of Students. And so you come in the main doors of the FERG. We're on the other side of the building from the food court. But on the main floor there. Yeah. And we have a relatively small staff. There's myself, and we have two case managers in the office who do a wonderful job, Dana Williams and Tawana Brown. Mm-hmm. You know, so every now and then you'll catch a time when we're all, you know, occupied with someone else, but mm-hmm. we definitely encourage students to drop by if they need anything.
Right, okay. Right.
And Jeremy, you know, looking at your website some more, because I always like to do my research on our guests that come, you know, some of the other offerings that I saw as far as your staff goes is I noticed that there is a behavioral intervention team and this crisis intervention response team. How do those folks function and what kind of departments are represented on those teams?
Yeah, so the behavioral intervention team, you know, part of my job is to administer that team. So it's not technically a part of, you know, student care and well-being, but it is a team that is on campus. You know, so my office is represented, you know, counseling. We have a university attorney that is on that, the Office of Threat Assessment, Title IX, housing. I'm probably forgetting someone, student conduct. Mm-hmm. We have some folks from academic affairs that are there to help us. So we have a group from a number of different departments on campus. So as we do get those reports of the students of concern, you know, the alarming behavior, the threats of self-harm, that sort of thing, you know, the behavioral intervention team can talk about some of those students, you know, where there is a risk to self or a risk to others in the university community, to make recommendations, to kind of work together to make sure that different departments that need to know do know and are on the same page, making a kind of a coordinated decision that's in the best interest of the student and the campus community as well.
Right. Okay.
Well, are there any other programs that we've tried to do our research and look over these things, and Sheena's done a great job with that. Do you see any other programs that you guys offer that could be beneficial to students that we haven't mentioned that you guys offer?
Yeah, one thing we haven't talked about is our on-call dean program. Mm-hmm. And so I mentioned the three staff members from our office that are present during the day, but we have two other staff members that work for our office, Delana Harbison and Wanda Bishop, and they work evenings and weekends.
Okay.
And anytime a student goes to the hospital that we know about, so usually if that's transported by an ambulance, you know, sometimes students will go by private vehicle and we just don't know that they're there. So a student, if you've been to the hospital and we weren't there, we just didn't know and sorry we missed you. But any other time a student goes to the hospital, our on-call deans are notified and they'll go out and visit a student just to see if they need any help. You know, getting in touch with parents, you know, to see if they need help with, you know, notifying instructors, communicating to be able to help with classes if they're going to be, you know, ill for a long time, just to make a point of contact from the university to express our concern for them and help them out. And so so I think that program really does a lot of good, just to provide a personal touch,
yeah.
You know, that we really do care about the students as students and want to be there with them if they're facing a difficult time. So that's something that we hadn't talked about yet.
Right. Go ahead, Gina.
Oh, I was just going to say, I love that. You know, I'm a very emotional person, and I feel like just having that on-call dean service, it's almost like just really solidifying to the student that they are part of the UA family, and we care about them as another family member when they are going through something like that, and knowing that there's a university representative that could check on them in the hospital. I'm sitting back here, all the feels right now, listening to Jeremy's services.
Well, it's great. I mean, and I hate that we waited till the very end here to talk about the on-call dean program, because it is such a it's been around for a while. Mm-hmm. And it is such a huge program, and it's not a show of ours if I don't mention my daughter about it, but with her being a freshman here, I'm seeing all these other things that provide just, you know, just great care for our students that that exists, but you don't realize how much they mean to the parents until you actually see it, and when you see it in action. Not that she's been to the hospital yet, but it's huge. The personal care that you get at such a large university is great, and what you do is great, Jeremy. We appreciate you taking the time to be on here with us today. I know you're busy and you have a lot to do, but this was a lot of good information.
Yeah, my pleasure. Appreciate you guys having me.
Yeah, no, this such great information. We've had an awesome afternoon with you, and I can't believe, you know, we're ending the show in just a little bit, but we are going to take a quick break, and we will catch you in just a bit. Thanks.
Welcome back to Fit to Be Tied, and once again, thank you for spending part of your Sunday afternoon with Sheena and myself, and we're going to close things down now. We got just a few minutes left. We'll thank Jeremy Henderson, who's the Director of Student Care and Wellbeing here at the university, for being our guest today, who gave out a lot of great information. We have a guest coming up next week, if everything works out. Dr. BJ Gunther from the Counseling Center is going to be here talking about Body Awareness Month. And she She has her own show.
Yes.
And she does her show on Tuesday nights at 6 o'clock. So quick plug for her, and I'm sure she'll give herself her own quick plug next week. But she does such a great job with that. And Sheena, if there is another expert on campus related to these types of issues, it's you. I mean, lots of events going on this month.
There is. You know, I think not too many people know that UA's version of Body Appreciation Week, or UA Body Appreciation Week, is actually the national version of National Eating Disorders Awareness Week. You know, we've seen a trend over the past 10 years with college campuses wanting to brand it in their own way to be able to promote body positivity as well as promote eating disorders awareness. Excuse me, I'm getting sleepy on this Sunday afternoon. But we do have a great lineup of events, and John actually, the Rec Center is going to be hosting one of our first events. It's going to be Monday, February 20th. There is a sports dietitian. His name is Michael Polis. He is a former student of mine, so of course he's going to be wonderful because he learned from me. I'm just kidding. But he actually works with the Air Force, is a sports dietitian, works with Troy football, and he is going to be talking about muscle dysmorphia as well as exercise supplements. He is part of a company that he started with another athletic trainer called Cornerstone Nutrition and Performance. And so he's going to be debunking a lot of thoughts related to protein needs, protein powders, you know, pre-workout and everything else. And then, of course, we've also got our Fashion Rocks and So Does My Body fashion show, which features models that are students, faculty, and staff. So John, if you would like to be on the show, we need a couple of guys. So you and your daughter, that could be great, great, great father-daughter bonding moment. You'll walk the runway. The MC is going to share what you love most about yourself, whether it is a physical feature or personality trait. And then you'll also talk about how you promote positive body image with your squad. So
I'm going to go ahead and take a pass on that right now. But Taylor,
hey, if you
might.
Can coerce some of your staff or students to be in the show, I'd buy you steak dinner.
Would you really?
I really would.
I would reconsider now.
Okay.
but this is a great thing that has been done for a long time, and it teaches students, you know, just to have pride in their body regardless of what they look like. There's so many things that go into that, but that self-confidence that you get with just feeling good about how you look regardless of, I mean, you can be in the best looking shape of your life, you can be so fit looking, and on the inside you can have high cholesterol, you can have high blood pressure, you can have so many negative things going on and that you don't know about. So, you know, it's just the opposite. There's so many different things to talk about that.
There are, you know, I think, you know, it's really just getting students and anyone to just embrace the concept of taking care of themselves for health and having that positive body image. We will be giving out t-shirts that week that actually they're printed backwards and you can only read them forwards if you're taking a selfie, and they say, change how you see, not how you look.
Oh,
and so we're
nice.
Really excited about that. We've got some faculty members again that will be in the show, and they want to actually tote their little toddler daughters with them just to show that mommy has positive body image, or daddy, John.
That's,
I'm telling
that's
you,
awesome.
You got to be on the show.
That's awesome. I don't have a baby anymore, but thank you.
You're welcome. Oh my goodness. Well, we've had a good time today.
It's been a fun day. Yeah. It's good to be back. I missed this last week.
Well, we can't wait to see you guys again next week. Thank you for spending your Sunday with us. You have been listening to Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and John on 90.7 The Capstone.